Hello and welcome back to another episode of FPL 360. We've been gone for a while, but I think we're back for good. Is that correct, Chuck?
That's definitely the goal here. Times have been a-changing, but things have finally steadied out.
Yeah, kind of like the start of the Premier League season. I guess since we've been gone for a while, I want to start by talking about just what's happened so far this term. What's been like the biggest surprise for you? Because I have one or two that I've been itching to talk about.
Oh, goodness. I mean, the biggest good surprise, easily Bournemouth. The biggest surprise to me has been what in the hell has happened to Burnley's defense?
Yeah, right? I mean, we're going to get to one of those defenders in detail a little later on, but it does not make any sense. I mean, this club went from being pretty much you can't score on them at home to, I mean, they give up the most shots at home, they've given up the most goals. What do you think's happened? They pretty much had the same team. You think it just caught up to them that they haven't put the money in where they needed to?
Every time that I watch them, it seems like it's something different. A lot of it has been issues with Stephen Ward and Matt Loughton, and just the fact that Ward's not playing and Loughton has been out of position a lot, which draws their center backs into space that they can't realistically cover. But it's unexplainable because Joe Hart's actually been good.
Yeah, the thing that's kind of confused me, and obviously Kevin Long is by no means an every match starter in the Premier League, but over the last season and a half, last two seasons, I think he's been one of their better center backs, even with Tarkowski and with Keane there before he moved. And it also doesn't help that they go out and sign Ben Gibson and he's been struck with injury.
It definitely doesn't. But yeah, looks and then like all, they should the have whole... signed a fullback.
Well, yeah, they should have just not qualified for the Europa League last season. I mean, talk about a club that was not prepared to go into Europe. A team that could be heading to Europe, which I am completely confused by, considering I had them pinned for relegation and their manager to be the first one sacked, is Watford. I mean, they've cooled off, but it doesn't make any sense.
Right along there with you, because I, too, had Watford being relegated. I'm still not sold on them after their current run that has seen them winless in... Oh, it's only two, but it definitely feels like a lot more than two.
Well, the thing was, they won their first four, and then since their
they
first
lost
four...
They lost three of their next six and drew one.
Yeah, and it's confusing. I mean, you have a guy like Roberto Pereira, who we know is talented, and he's had his injury struggles. He came into form. I know he got a goal, I think, two or three weeks ago, but he's kind of disappeared since then. Holobas has been Holobas. He got a goal last weekend in the draw, but I don't understand how Javi Gracia has gotten them to play, since I think they took less than 10 points under him last season. Do you think they're going to finish in the top 10?
Absolutely not. Their sweet spot is still going to be somewhere between 12th and 15th, because they're not a top half squad. And Watford's done this to us before, where they get off to a hot start to the season and then just go through total collapse in January. So I'll believe it when I see it.
One of the clubs that a lot of people had pinned to make some noise after their promotion was Fulham. And now we're sitting here towards the middle of November. Not only are they bottom of the table, but they have the worst defense, They're on pace for a record-setting terrible year, and they have a new manager.
Hey now, Fulham did make some noise. It just wasn't the noise we expected them to make.
I don't know how you can have that bad of a defense.
I don't either, because unfortunately I can't claim to have been watching when Derby County set the record for most goals conceded in the 08-09 season, but good lord, watching this Fulham team is terrible.
It kind of just dawned on me when I was looking at the table that they've conceded 4 less goals than goals that Manchester City have scored.
Yikes. That's pretty bad. And even worse, an attack that was supposed to be the strength of the team heading into the season has only produced 11 goals, which is bottom third of the league.
Yeah, they're pretty much, I don't know now. I mean, if they had hired anyone except Claudio Ranieri, I would have said they were toast. What are we expecting them? I guess, how are we expecting Ranieri to change that club? Because they went out, they spent a boatload of money in the summer, and then they got rid of Slava before he really had time to settle in with that team after bringing them up, being so impressive.
All right. Let's take a look at this. So the new manager bump usually lasts about 5 games. Here's Fulham's next 5, and I want you to predict how many points you think they're going to get in this. Ready?
Yeah.
At home to Southampton. Away to Chelsea. At home to Leicester City. Away to Man United. And home to West Ham.
I think they'd be lucky to walk out of there with 4 points.
Yeah. It's going to be rough. And this takes Fulham to December 15th, the thick of the festive period.
I'm looking at that run of matches, and I'm saying they're going to draw either Southampton or Leicester City, and they'll probably beat Manchester United. You know why? Because my club is terrible.
I mean,
and that would be the most Mourinho thing in the entire world.
The way the Premier League has gone this year, they're going to keep a clean sheet against Chelsea and then allow 5 to Leicester.
Yeah, and Sergio Rico will be on penalties. But in all seriousness, how do we see the former mastermind from the King Power Stadium changing this team? There's tons of talent, or at least what we thought was talent in that squad. I mean, as someone who paid close attention over the last 2 years to Leicester City over at Roto-World, past 3 years actually, I know what I have certain expectations out of Ranieri. I'm curious to hear what you have to say before I give my take.
I mean, I love Claudio Ranieri. I do think that he will do a lot to change Fulham and that it will be a lot of good for Fulham players in fantasy. Whether that turns into success in the league is what's going to be interesting. As of right now, I do believe that he can pull Fulham to about a 14th place finish and safety. But it's all going to be down to health. And if Fulham has any money left,
The problem is, I think they just went out and they spent so much that it was going to be unrealistic to be able to integrate all those additions into the squad without Robux. Granted, I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but I was not as high in them as a lot of people were. I did not expect them to be this bad by any means. I kind of had them pinned for around 15th, maybe 14th right now. I mean, looking at the players that have been getting the most minutes so far, and obviously they have been using 4-4 or a 4-4-3 variation of that, 4 or 3-4-3, depending upon which fullbacks have been fit and where they've been using Sessegnon. Do you think Ranieri is going to come in and use a similar formation to the 4-4-2-6 he used at Leicester? Or do you think there's another formation that suits this team better?
Most definitely. Like, I believe it's going to be between that and a 4-4-1-1, which is essentially still a 4-4-2. One thing that'll be nice is that you will see no more of Maxime Nemarchand at center back. You will likely see no more of him in a Fulham lineup, period, which is only good for the team because he is a left back. He is not very good at playing left back. He is not very good at playing center back. Do I particularly know who's going to be the center back partnership? In a perfect world, probably Alfie Mawson and Colin Chambers, which isn't a bad partnership. Probably more likely to start out with because Ranieri does like being able to play from the back. In my opinion, it's probably Mawson and pulling the American flag for Tim Ream.
Yeah, we can only hope. Before we move into the next section, one guy I'm interested in is Vieto. Do you think it's going to be him and Mitrovic up front moving forward under Ranieri?
So this is where it really depends on what formation Ranieri wants to play. Because if it's a if it's a proper 4-4-2, yes. If it's not, then it's probably Sherla.
Yeah, it'll be interesting just because those two guys can play on the wing. And if you're playing with a guy underneath Mitrovic, I mean, you have Tom Carney. Sherla can definitely do it just because he's been around the block and he's played a ton of positions. But enough about Fulham. Let's move into the bread and butter of this episode. We're going to be talking about some of the biggest surprises and disappointment from the Fantrax season so far. I think the guy we got to start with, he's been an FPL darling in the salary cap format up until the last few matches. Matt Doherty. I mean, I did not see this coming. Maybe because I wasn't familiar with him before the season. I know some people that we work closely with were onto him. Did you expect him to be the second highest scoring defender after 12 weeks?
Second highest scoring defender? How about in standard Toga scoring leagues, second highest scoring player?
It's absolutely insane. I mean, his 100 and I think he's up around 147 or 150 points right now.
Well, so
better only by Marcus Alonso.
You have to remember the fact that we nerfed aerial duels in our league.
That's a good point.
He is actually at 203 points.
Jesus. That's insane. Yeah, we tweaked the shit out of our scoring.
Yeah.
Still remarkable.
He has had double-digit points in Fantrax in all games but two.
Yeah, I mean, he's been amazing. Do you think he's going to keep up this production the rest of the season?
I mean, it's almost impossible to. Because he's bettering an Alonso-like rate, but he also doesn't have to because anyone that got him likely got him, like, at the very end of their drafts or on the waiver wire. He was only drafted in 47% of leagues.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. Looking at him, it's like it almost doesn't make sense. I mean, if you get a good enough offer, I would take it. But at the same time, I mean, you got him for next to nothing. He's definitely one of the steals of the draft.
I mean, in his case, as well as someone who we're going to talk about later, I don't know if there's anything as a good enough offer for him.
Another guy, this guy I'm a personal fan of, who I was well aware of before this season, and I got him late in a couple places, Ryan Fraser.
Ah, yes. The wee man.
So, the funny thing about Frazier is that you remember he when he broke in a couple years ago, he had something like 8 or 9 assists in the second half of the season. And just the way that the Cherries play is so conducive to him for fantasy. I mean, he was only drafted in 39% of leagues, which I also find kind of crazy. But, I mean, considering the amount of crosses he puts in, I could see him continuing his production for the rest of the season, especially in leagues where you are scoring crosses. Obviously, you know, you can tweak everything when they came over, but... I mean, even in matches when he doesn't go the full 90 minutes, he's still averaging roughly 9 points.
If Josh King comes back and is able to do anything up top, not only will he continue his rate, there's room for improvement.
Yeah, the thing I found craziest about Frazier is that he's had less than double-digit points in 2 of his 12 appearances. And one of those games was at Chelsea.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, would you say he's been the biggest surprise in midfield?
I can't really argue with it, because probably the next biggest midfield surprise is Felipe Anderson, but he was expected to put up numbers. He's just still done better than those.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could throw James Maddison's name in the hat, but in terms of an opportunity, I'm not surprised to see him in the top 10 for midfielders.
Yeah, Maddison had big expectations.
Yeah, the only other guy would be probably Milivojevic, just because even though he hasn't done it, he's done it in the peripheral metrics, so he's scoring how he should have been scoring last season, minus the penalties. Because we'll talk about a forward now. Long forgotten former Burnley striker turned loanee to Southampton, Danny Ings. 4 goals in 10 starts. He's averaging 10 points per match. His ADP was in the 300s where he was taken.
I'll see your Danny Ings and raise your Raul Jimenez.
So it's funny you bring him up, because I was putting together some numbers on him for my column over at RotoWorld, and I noticed that he's never played more than 950 minutes in a single season.
He's never scored more than 9 goals in a single season, and he's still not on track to do that this year either. But his peripheral numbers and his assists are racking up.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of becoming... I'm trying to think of a good comparison. He's kind of having, like,
Firmino.
I guess the Firmino's Giroud effect in terms of what he's creating. In terms of key passes for forwards, he ranks 3rd behind only Callum Wilson and Sergio Aguero. So, I mean, he's making a ton. He's getting it done. I guess the one thing I was going to say about Ings, do you think he's going to keep up the pace this season? Or do you think he's going to peter out?
I mean, what pace? Because he's not necessarily... The weird thing with Danny Ings is you look at everything that he's done, 3 goals on the season, and you're like, why don't you have more?
Well, no, that's what I mean, right? So he's on pace for... maybe around 12 goals. And I'm just saying that because he's gotten a couple... It's not a ton, but do you think he hits double digits this season?
I'm going to say yes, because I don't know if it's statistically possible for Southampton to stay as bad as they have been with shots going into the net. I say this after watching them do this exact same thing last year, but... They're like Huddersfield, but they have a finisher.
Yeah, now that Charlie Austin's back, he'll get in a couple goals before he gets hurt again. He scored one, he had the one disallowed at the weekend.
Yeah, that was bad.
Having talked about some guys that have performed well, I think it's only fitting that we give our disappointment 11 after 12 weeks. We went with a 3-4-3 formation. It was a heated discussion. It was a lot longer than we anticipated. But I guess we'll start at the back with David De Gea. I mean, I understand that he's been a superior goalkeeper the last couple of seasons, and I get that picking him earlier in the draft made sense.
No, it didn't. Don't even give.
Well, no. When I say earlier, I mean 7th, 8th round at the earliest. And to see he had an ADP of 46, it's just insane.
I mean, rule number one of draft, don't even consider a keeper before the 10th. And even if you're considering your keeper in the 10th, you still probably shouldn't take one before the 12th, 13th round.
Yeah, if you looked at the scoring over the past couple seasons, it's usually one of the newly promoted keepers that finishes at the number one spot. But yeah, I don't understand that. In defense, I guess out of those three, Otamendi was a 5th-round pick. Ben Davies was a 5th-round pick. And then we went with Tarkowski. He went in the 8th round, but I mean, you can't not include him considering how well he had done and how poor he's been this season, the entirety of that Burnley defense.
And just looking at the fact that after the big defenders, most of them who have been disappointments, Benjamin Mendy, have gotten injured over the course of the season. These guys, for the most part, have played outside of Otamendi, who lost his job. And Tarkowski's just been a liability to teams.
Yeah, Otamendi came back and he started those 3 matches, but I think it's just he's just not better than Stones and Laporte. And I think the injury, you know, obviously didn't help, but if I was picking that side, I'd probably have him lower down on the team sheet. In midfield, yeah, Mkhitaryan.
I don't want to talk about this, but I have finally rid myself of him in our league, and I'm very happy with being able to get Colin Patterson in return.
I just think he needs to leave at this point. Just go back to Germany, go somewhere else.
I don't even know what he needs to do. Dortmund doesn't need him.
I don't know. I'm really confused by him. I mean, he had a golden opportunity this season, and he's just absolutely botched it. The other guys we went for in midfield, their ADP is just insane for what they've done. It's insane in the first place. N'Golo Kanté, he was averaged around the 42nd pick. Naby Keita, 38. I don't know why people would pick them that high. Do you have any idea, Chuck?
Well, Keita essentially was... this is a new two-way player coming into the league. People expected that he would have gotten at least 8 goals, 10 assists on the season in a high-octane Liverpool attack. And if he didn't score, he'd pick up peripheral statistics with tackles and key passes and different things. Somehow, all of that has gone to James Milner.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, Milner continues to surprise. N'Golo Kanté, I mean, he's averaging 6 points per match, which is probably about right for him. But he's just not the same playing further up the field in that midfield 3.
Yeah, it's sad watching him go forward because he doesn't want to do it. It's not something that he should be doing, and he's much better just being a shield and laterally passing it to someone else to go forward.
Yeah, it's like someone needs to remind Sarri that this dude played the same role for 2 clubs And because of him playing that role, each of those clubs won the title in back-to-back seasons.
Well, see, that's the weird thing with Chelsea bringing in Jorginho, because Sarri wanted a metronome to make his midfield tick. That's all fine and dandy, but if that's going to move Conte out of his best role, then maybe you should consider selling him.
Yeah, I mean, if I was in that spot, I would have thought they would have went to, you know, something more along the lines of a double six with both those guys sitting in. I mean, it doesn't really fit exactly how Sarri wants to play with accommodating.
Yeah, he wants his midfield to go forward at some point, so that wouldn't work with the two of them next to each other.
Yeah. The other guy is Sessegnon. It's crazy to think that he had one 20-point performance this season, and the rest of the time he hasn't had more than 6 fantasy points in a single game.
Yeah, it's sad to watch. Because either he's floundering at forward or being handcuffed at left back.
Yeah, it kind of gets lost in the fact that he's 18.
And it's unfortunately only going to be worse under Ranieri, because I don't think he has any role at Fulham right now except left back.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, I don't think he's going to go away. And I just think, looking at how bad he's been, if he plays that much under Ranieri, I'm expecting a pip in his production. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, would you be trading for him if you could get him on the cheap?
Absolutely not, because it doesn't help your fantasy team to have a midfielder playing back as a defender. Like, if he was actually rated as a defender, sure, I'd look at bringing him into my team. But if I want to look at a Fulham defender who's actually a defender and maybe coming back at some point, it's probably Joe Bryan.
Yeah, he's made, out of his 12 appearances this season, he's played 3 up front, 3 in defense, and 6 in midfield, with most of his time in those midfield matches spent towards his own goal. Up front, I guess we'll start with Gabriel Jesus. Talk about an overrated handcuff. He was going in the middle of the second round, and he just can't get a start over Aguero.
Yeah, I mean, Gabriel Jesus should now become the poster child for why handcuffs are stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to you earlier, that would be like, for those of you who play American fantasy football, if you took Todd Gurley's handcuff in like the 5th round. I mean, the one thing that is interesting to note is that Aguero has not been going the full 90. And he's usually only playing around 65 minutes. So Jesus has been getting time. But, you know, we can't fully put the blame on him, since I just did not expect it to be such a monopoly for Aguero.
I mean, but last week we also saw Aguero go off and Sterling just go up front.
Yeah, that was interesting. What are you doing with Jesus if you have him? I mean, I feel like you got to hold him at this point.
I mean, in an 8-team league, I'm dropping him. In a 10-team league, I'm probably still dropping him if someone comes along, because there's a lot of forwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think
in a 12-team league, I think you probably have to hold him.
Yeah, if you're in a 10-team league and you have him, I would try and package him with someone. Probably ideally to whoever owns Aguero. Which is kind of why in the beginning of the season, even though I advocated for drafting him around the third round, which still is early, at least at that point you wouldn't be saying I potentially gave up getting someone the likes of, you know, Firmino for Jesus. And then the other guy, my boy Jamie V, Vardy only has 3 goals this season. He went towards the back end of the second round. Is this the end of Jamie Vardy as we know him? Is he just getting too old?
I sure hope not. Because retired from international duty to focus on his club career, and now this is what we're getting.
Just guys on the bench that we noted, Jorginho, he went in the fifth round. Fred's just not making the transition. He went in the third round. Morata has been better lately, but does not excuse how poor he was to start the season. And I kind of skipped through those guys because what happened to Jota?
He got the yips, and now Ivan Carvalho is healthy, and he is screwed.
Yeah, Carvalho's looked much better.
But my boy Helder Costa, though.
Yeah, him as well. Speaking of Vardy, I mean, looking at those underperformers in terms of players to target for the rest of the season, would you consider trading for Vardy? I think he's going to bounce back. I don't know where he's going to bounce back to.
I've owned him in multiple places. I'm done.
I guess if you were trading for Vardy right now, what would you offer? I mean, he's averaging 7 points per game, which is not what you wanted out of a guy you probably picked in the late second round or third round. He's pretty much a forward two right now.
Is he even a forward two, really? Like,
in a 12-team league, yes.
But right now, I'm pretty sure Morata's averaging more points per game than Vardy, right, at this point?
Yeah, Morata's up around 9 now.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Actually, no. Okay, Morata's at 7.86. So, I guess that's the fairest swap I can think of. Because, like, I'm just looking at my forward line right now, which is Morata, Richarlison, and Leroy Sané.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, if you could try and trade him to a team that is shallow at forward.
Those teams don't exist in Fantrax, though.
Yeah. I don't know, it's tough. I don't know, I mean, maybe I would trade, like, a midfielder three.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess if you have someone, like, maybe you dangle Ruben Neves.
Yeah, I was going to say Ruben Neves or maybe Andros Townsend.
I don't know if Townsend's performed well enough.
I mean, he got a goal recently and he's kind of bounced back. He's at 8 points per game this season. He has a couple of good returns. Over his last 3 weeks, he's averaging about 10 points. So he's kind of come back into form.
He has two double-digit performances on the year.
Yeah.
Because
he had one against Newcastle in the beginning of the season. I mean, either way, I guess what we're getting at is someone in that range where it's probably a third midfielder on your team. It's maybe flirting with being a fringe second midfielder. What about Alexis Sanchez?
I'd trade for him.
And then your Spurs boys. Dele Alli. Now that he's back in the team.
I mean, I'd definitely look to acquire Dele Alli. I mean, I've actually attempted to acquire Dele Alli, but the Dele Alli owner in our league, looking at you, Will, won't budge on his valuation.
What did he have him pinned at?
I mean, he's rightfully so valuing him as a high-tier mid-two, which is probably fair over the course of the season. Just obviously that's not where Dele Alli's been performing right now, but that's also due to the fact that he's been injured.
Yeah, I mean, out of those guys, I'd be looking to trade Rivardi personally. I think it's inevitable that he's going to start scoring more goals. Sanchez, I have no idea. Dele's fine, but I would not want to pay King's ransom for him. I guess before we wrap this week up, how you been doing in FPL?
It's been a roller coaster.
I mean, you did beat me the last 2 weeks, so I figured you're on the up.
I mean, I'm on the up, but that doesn't mean that I'm in good standing yet. I am, unfortunately, at 2.6 million in my overall rank with 595 total points, because while my green arrows have been green, good Lord, have my red arrows been bad.
Yeah, I had two bad weeks. Game week 10, I was up to 10K, and then back-to-back red arrows with misused minus four transfers have put me at 50K right now, and I have a lot to consider. But the reason why I wanted to note this is we've gone over a bunch of guys, obviously, for draft leagues. If you're looking for a differential, doing a little early predictions for game week 13, out of anyone we discussed, any of them catch your eye? I mean, I know off the top of my head that Rondon's owned, he's at less than 1% total ownership. And a guy who we haven't mentioned, who I figured you would want to talk about, Callum Patterson, he's at less than 1% as well in midfield at only 5.2 million.
Yeah, I did a little writing about why you should add Callum Patterson this week. Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, for me, looking at my team right now, if I want to make a move and exploit a differential, it's probably him. Just because at 5.2, you can move laterally in defense if you need to replace someone like Trippier. But yeah, I mean, it's something interesting to note. And I think it's no coincidence that my spike in form in FPL has resulted in a poor showing for me in draft this year.
I'm slowly coming back in draft, and that's just due to a lot of trading.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of FPL 360. I know last time we said we'd be back, and then we left and went away for a long time. However, this time I'm like 94% sure we'll be back.
Yes, there will be another episode before game week 13 in which we actually prepare for game week 13.
Yeah, so with that said, that's going to do it for us. Best of luck over the international break, and hopefully USA will beat England on Wayne Rooney's goodbye tomorrow.
I don't want to think about that game.